say, I'm also recording.
You're recording.
Wow, so that's everybody?
Yeah, on this February 11th, 2018. This is the Fancy Ramen Podcast. I'm Neil.
I'm Cookie.
And I'm Scott.
And you might be wondering why you're staring at a thumbnail right now, and that's because I'm a little under the weather, so I did not head out to the quote-unquote studio with cameras and all that stuff.
And that gave me permission to look like shit in front of my camera and not turn it on.
Can I please request that you literally, at this point, have a picture of a thumbnail?
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
If I remember it.
I'm sure you won't.
An actual thumbnail.
Yes.
I
need a thumbnail of a thumbnail.
Guys, it's been a pretty busy week for me. How have your weeks gone?
Work busy, but that's about it.
Yeah, my work was also quite busy, but outside of it, pretty relaxed, pretty chill.
I don't really have anything exciting to say, except for Alamo Drafthouse is doing a special like ramen night on the 27th this month. I guess this applies to you, Cookie. Where they're going to be playing, it's a Miyazaki movie, but it's one that's not that well known. Have you guys ever heard of the Miyazaki film, or not Miyazaki film, the Ghibli film, or Ghibli film, The Cat Returns?
That's the one with the cat who's on the pogo stick, right?
A pogo? Well, he has like a rod, or a walking cane. Well, in the meantime, as I've while I've been killing time by talking about The Cat Returns, I found the title of the movie. They're playing Whisper of the Heart on the 27th. And Whisper of the Heart is actually the cat's quote-unquote first movie, hence why The Cat Returns is titled that.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen The Cat Returns, but I've seen Whisper of the Heart, and the cat is a fictional like character in the imagination of the main protagonist in Whisper of the Heart.
You might like The Cat Returns if you enjoyed Whisper of the Heart. It's not really like super serious or anything. It's only like about an hour long, but nice little feel-good movie, especially if you like cats. But
I do. My favorite cats are the type that are drawn, and therefore I can't have an allergic reaction to them.
You know, I kind of feel the same way. Like virtual cats, 2D cats, and 3D cats. I don't discriminate, just as long as they don't have dander. But I like, you know, dander-filled cats as well. But yeah, so they're playing Whisper of the Heart on the 27th, and they're doing like a special menu. And by special menu, they have ramen. So I've got tickets to go to that. I just picked them up.
That should be cool. Their food is sometimes pretty solid.
Their cheese curds, which obviously are just frozen and then thrown into a deep fryer, are also pretty solid.
Is that a joke on the actual consistency of the cheese curds?
No, just the fact that it's like, oh, that's one of my favorite things there, even though I know it's something that they have in bags in their freezer that, you know, that they throw into a fryer for however many minutes.
Yeah. Whatever you do, don't get their quinoa bowl. It's cold. It's like a really bad quinoa salad. And the fact that it's served cold is, I think, what kills it. Because the flavor is not all that bad, but it's unpleasant.
Well, so I was wondering if I would get the ramen or not at this film, because it's like, you're going to be watching a movie. Like, do you really want to be slurping
noodles?
Things? Yeah.
I mean, if other people are going to be slurping noodles, I don't know. I would order, when I would go to like Sunday matinee shows with Kyle, I would order the burrito that they have there, which is a really good breakfast burrito that comes with tortilla chips. And he hates noise when he's watching movies. And so I'd just crunch on tortilla chips for the beginning of the movies.
When you say good friend Kyle, do you actually mean like rival or hated friend or someone you like to torment? Because we've also heard you scare Kyle before.
Oh, no. I mean, I treat my good friends maybe a little differently than other people do, but I am genuinely endeared to this person. My rivals, I'm normally much more cordial to.
So
Neil, do you feel kind of rivaled with Scott now, apparently?
Apparently, both of us, yeah.
I'm not nearly as like nice to you guys as I would be to a rival.
Scott's kind of tsundere.
It is so true.
Which I don't understand how your girlfriend likes you if you're tsundere.
Well, I was about ready to say the same thing. It seems unfathomable that Sierra doesn't understand what a tsundere is when that is like mostly my behavior.
I guess it's one of those cases where it's like she's probably annoyed by the tsundere character, but also drawn to him.
Maybe so. Now that I think about it, I was a tsundere before I even knew what it was, and maybe that's why I find that, like, I guess not, like, I don't find that role annoying or, I guess, odd in any sense. I'm just like, yeah, no, that seems like totally normal behavior. Like, this is totally acceptable on how you can interact with people.
Well, while we get into your personal life a little bit, why don't you tell us about something you did this week, Scott?
Oh, man. I went a wassailing, and it's a little late for that. So if people want to fact check me, I'm already well aware that normally if you're going to be celebrating the orchard-relevant wassail pagan holiday, it's normally like January 5th or 6th, or if you're getting real old school, like we will probably do next year, the old 12-y night, January 17th. But anyway, it's a basic holiday that is, it has roots in pagan tradition in trying to bring in a successful apple harvest and crop for the upcoming year. And so you go around and you dip toast in cider and then hang it on the trees. Well, the wassail queen does that. And you run around and have torches and wear old-timey clothing and all this other fun, like, kind of old world celebration. And I went to a party that my workplace hosts for the big wassail holiday, and just had a grand old time. And Neil and Cookie got to see some pictures of my outfit and Sierra's costume as well.
See, that clears up rad. A lot of confusion I had, because I assumed this was a Washington sailing event.
No.
Fair enough.
Yeah, well, there's actually, it's very confusing. If you go to Google wassail, the first thing that'll probably pop up is the drink. Then if you continue to search, you can encounter the house visiting version of wassail, which is like the caroling style of wassail. But then there's also the orchard visiting wassail, which is what we were doing because we have a relationship with an orchard being a cidery. And so it's pretty sweet. But there's not a huge amount of resources that are like immediately available to learn about it. And it's a more, I don't know how often it gets celebrated in the States. It's got a pretty strong tradition in England where there's a lot of
wassailing going on.
Yeah, there's a lot of wassailing going on because they're a very large producer of cider, and they have very like strong historic roots with celebrating it in their regions that produce the most cider, which I'm trying to think of a couple of them.
Old apple tree, we wassail thee, and hoping thou will bear, for the Lord doth know where we shall be till apples come another year. For the bear well, and to bloom well, so merry let us be. Let every man take off his hats and shout to the old apple tree. Old apple tree, we wassail thee, and hoping thou will bear, hat fulls, cap fulls, 3 bushel bag fulls, and a little heap under the stairs. Sorry.
So I have a strange fondness for rhymes that are forced, like air and yare. Like,
you mean a slant rhyme?
Is that what it's called?
Yeah. Come on, man. Where's your rhyming background? Don't you listen to and analyze hip hop and rap music?
We analyzed Run DMC all throughout my high school career.
Okay, yeah. Did you enjoy the Kanye West semester?
Kanye was not accepted in small towns when I was of the high school age.
I see.
It was only until the recent Kanye in Schools Act, that it became a mandatory, program.
Yeah, that's tough. I know that before then you had to deal with just DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince. And
but I mean, we did get Tupac, though. We did have a you know, roughly like a quarter on Tupac. So that's not good. Like we were heathens.
Oh, man. Yeah. Why do you like slant rhymes, Neil? Or like what do you just find it charming that they're obviously not a direct rhyme and therefore they're bending the rules a little bit?
I find it charming in the same way that if I see someone fall on ice, like I kind of chuckle, but I also hope they're okay.
Wow.
Like, I hope they're fine, but I'm glad I witnessed such an event. That's kind of how I feel about slant rhyming.
Oh, I can totally agree then. I have fond memories of watching two girls walking down the street when I was walking to class one day in college get splashed by just a tsunami of a puddle by a car passing by. And I thought, that is the worst thing that could happen to them, and I feel terrible about it. Wow, did you see how tall that wave was? It swallowed them. They got wrecked. Yeah.
It's a good feeling.
It's like a guilty Schadenfreude or Schadenfreude. I don't know how you pronounce it exactly.
Schadenfreude.
Thank you, Cookie, our resident German expert.
I can tell you
his pronunciations we know are 100%, especially after the Ryu pronunciation last time.
Ryu? Yeah.
Anyway, Cookie, what have you been up to besides really sharpening up on your German skills?
Just mainly working and playing more Monster Hunter. I'm now in the late after game.
Ooh, I need to catch up, and I can explain why I'm behind when it gets to our game discussion portion. But
so you're going to have to play another 20-some hours, I'd say?
Yeah, but if I get PlayStation Online, I can just have Cookie carry me through it.
Yes,
do my
no.
heavy lifting. Help me.
I mean, it depends how good Cookie is, because playing multiplayer, like the difficulty ramps up, everything scales.
I thought just the health ramped up.
Yeah, health ramps up.
I thought damage also did too. Maybe that's just previous iterations.
No, damage doesn't ramp. I don't believe damage ramps up on this one, but the only time damage does end up ramping up is when you go to the high level hunts, which I'm doing now.
Have you felt like the environments have become kind of stagnant or what's the word I'm looking for?
Formulaic?
Not necessarily formulaic. I mean, that is probably something you could say is true about Monster Hunter in general.
I would say so.
But is it recycling a lot of the environments now for you?
Well, there's only 5 hunting grounds, but I'm actually still finding myself fairly surprised. I was hunting a Rathian the other day, and usually where it like makes its camp, something I didn't know about, at least I think it's the Rathian, it's the big red dragon inside of the forest area, but where it makes its camp to like go to sleep, just yesterday was my first time seeing there's a big wall that's right next to its little thing that if you blow it up, it actually floods the Rathian down and he takes a bunch of damage, and that just like opened up a completely different area, little spot. But yeah, so I'm not really finding a like super repetitiveness, more along the lines of where it gets kind of repetitive for me, at least the environment wise, is, hey, I know these monsters like habits, some of these monsters habits, so I know exactly where I need to go if I'm going to be hunting this thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, and okay. It's nice that you kind of develop that knowledge on your own, because otherwise you can do the tracking and see exactly where the monster is headed. But there's something really rewarding about being like, I already have an idea where it's going to go. Like,
yep.
It makes you feel like you've become a better hunter intellectually, as opposed to the game telling you where it's going to be to make up for your like lack of observational skills or critical reasoning.
Yeah, but no, haven't really been. My week's been kind of boring besides yesterday. Went out, had some ramen with Neil, and also came home and drank way too much.
Oh, you That's continued okay. the drinking afterwards?
Definitely continued the drinking afterwards.
Mixed rum drinks?
Actually, no rum drinks. Some scotch, some whiskey, some vodka. Oh, and some Icelandic malts.
That's a pretty
schnapps.
That's a pretty healthy diversity there. I will permanently have you ingrained in my head as the rum king with your particular like cabinet full of different flavored rums and your especially good mixed drinks that you make.
Oh, they're still, all the rums are still in there. That hasn't changed. We were just, my in-laws came back from Iceland and they brought me an assortment of Icelandic drinks.
Ooh, that's cool.
So I've got two gins left. I had a malt and I had a schnapps, and it's like 2 ounces of each.
Yeah, that ramen place we went to, without naming names, I feel like my experiences there are always slightly polarizing.
Was the tonkatsu not to your liking last night?
That was fine, but it was just like, if you had told me that we were going to be waiting 20 minutes for the last person in our party to get their food, I would have been, you know, I would not have been surprised, I guess.
I was actually kind of surprised. It's usually not that different from the times.
Well, like I told you, the first time I went there, my broth tasted like dishwater. Like, I seriously think they accidentally used dishwater in with the soup base. It took two or three people getting their meals after, or like ordering after me before I got my meal, for them to, you know, for me to like chime in and be like, hey, where the fuck's my food? And then another like 15 minutes to pass before I got my ramen. Maybe it's ultimately our fault this time for going on a Saturday, because it was pretty busy.
It was. But I will say I did like our magical adventure of going downstairs.
Yeah, the basement of this ramen shop has a Japanese quote-unquote bar. And unfortunately, it's not like a cover for a mahjong den, but it was still pretty cool. And there was even a vending machine where Cookie got a shrimp No, he got a sweet potato chips or crackers, whatever you want to call them. Puff snacks.
Nice.
Yeah, Lizzie kind of got home and decimated those.
Did she like
a couple of shots of Kraken? Yes.
So I buy the potato snacks that were right next to it, and I don't think I've ever seen the sweet potato snacks at the Asian Mart, but yeah, if they're similar at all, they're pretty solid. They're not too salty. They're really light, so you can just eat a whole bunch without even realizing it.
Yeah.
Is that all you played this week, Cookie?
Some more Call of Duty. They brought back Prompt Hunt, and I just picked up Wildlands.
Have you been playing with other people?
Wildlands?
Yeah.
No, I've literally just downloaded it. My brother convinced me to buy it yesterday, so I've got it right before we went out to dinner.
Ah, okay, so.
Downloaded it last night, and then with the company that I brought home last night, we played Drop Mix, and I DJ'd for a little bit, and we drank. That was it. Oh, and then more Call of Duty.
After the drinking. Mm-hmm. Were you playing really well only to wake up the next morning or this morning to discover you actually played terribly?
No, I was playing moderately okay, only to discover that I was playing moderately okay.
Yeah, I don't know what your background is with drunk gaming, Neil, but I find for certain games it often helps like get you all relaxed and in the zone. That's normally my best performance window, is slightly tipsy.
I don't find that I play a whole lot of games that require like fine motor skills, I guess, aside from like League and the occasional fighter. So I don't really know like what drinking does to my mechanics, if you will.
Yeah, gotcha.
It makes them slightly looser.
You know, though, I imagine that like League in particular probably would be a game where it would suffer tremendously because of all of the decision making.
I don't know, man. It's you start to do less decision making and more just like I guess gut decisions, and every once in a while you make some really good decisions. I feel like when I drank and played League, I was a playmaker.
Only to wake up the next morning to see his KDA.
Look at all my losses. No. I think the extra factor in that is the friend that I would play with when when we'd play like a drinking game and play League, normally with the game, it was like if you took a death, you took a drink. And if you got a kill, you took a drink. And so I would just work very hard to not die and then only cinch on kills that I knew were really important. Otherwise, I'd just go for objectives the whole time to avoid getting too sloshed. But then this player that I played with was also exceptionally good and so carried my ass. So there may be some extra factors involved.
Sounds like it.
Yeah.
Also, Scott, what have you been doing this week aside from, or what's caused you from playing as much Monster Hunter this week?
Oh, that's because I remembered that I needed to check up on Darkest Dungeon releasing for the Switch. And as soon as I found out that it does indeed have touchscreen capability, I picked that bad boy up and I haven't put it down. And man, that is a fun game. I don't know if I've played anything too similar to it recently, so it's really kind of like scratching that itch of a turn-based game that relies on some roguelike elements and really good use of like mechanics in order to survive relatively difficult combat. And I know you've played it. I don't think, Cookie, you probably haven't played Darkest Dungeon, have you?
Nope. I did a brief foray into Darkest Dungeon and was trying to kill some people, was trying to keep some people alive, and everyone ended up boning me.
Yeah, see, I think the biggest secret to that game has got to be, like, everybody's disposable. You lose 4 recruits, you can just, you know, get 4 more recruits off of the wagon next time.
So there's some like weirdness to Darkest Dungeon when you embrace the fact that people can be used as a resource. That's like maybe one flaw to game design, or to the game design being that, and they circumvent this in ways, and I'll explain that in a second. But let's say you're low on money, because like money and the resources made like emblems, portraits, and so forth, those are the key things that you use to power up your characters, right? Aside from experience levels.
Yeah, the other argument too is that like gold, the most valuable resource, is how you're able to either equip a party or be completely unable to provide them with the basic necessities for dungeoneering.
Well, so once you embrace the idea that you can just hire on, or like you keep 4 slots open. Not saying I do this, but it's a
not saying I do this, fine, but the strategy has worked for me for ages.
it's a perfectly fine strategy with like absolutely no punishment to just keep 4 slots open in your caravan at all times. Hire on 4 random mercs and then go on a mission with those 4 mercs. Get loot and return back with at least 1 person still alive. Immediately fire that team, and what you have are the fruits of their efforts without any problems.
Yeah, the only loss is the limited space in your graveyard.
The unlimited space in your graveyard,
yeah.
Right? So looking on that, like I kind of in hindsight wish they had made the mercenaries like maybe not a limited resource, but made them require some sort of resource. But I also understand that like if you're not good at the game, then at that point you could have a fail state that would turn people off from playing it, because the game is otherwise pretty what's the word I'm looking for? Pretty
shit-tacular?
Unforgiving at times.
Unforgiving's a good word. Yeah. It definitely punishes you if you are not away, like it's one of those games that won't tell you what you're doing wrong, because I think you can be successful with most anything if you have a really good grasp on what you're doing and why you're doing it. But until you get that level of experience, or you know, you're lucky enough to be like innately attuned to successful ways to play the game strategically, then it can just be severely punishing and seem like you're just up against a wall. I will say that as much as I've enjoyed the game and kind of learned how to play it, there is one boss fight that has got me just stuck right now that I'm still trying to figure out. And that's against this like the Swine Prince or whatever. It's this boss battle where you're fighting against a giant weird abomination of a pig beast and a much smaller cheerleader pig beast that does a lot of like debuffing and marking for your team. And I have yet to figure out how to beat it because I just get stun locked over and over and over again with my whole party until I have like maybe one person remaining in the party and I can retreat or they're all killed.
Man, I love how the boss encounters in that game are made because they're like for every boss battle, there are one or two strategies that may not be obvious from the get-go, but like those one or two strategies turn the battle from being impossible, aside from brute forcing it, but it turns them from being impossible to like being somewhat manageable. And I can't remember that particular boss battle, like, or whatever, what you have to do in it.
I totally agree. There are some other fights I've been in. I've fought two other bosses that have been very entertaining fights and a lot of fun, like mechanically diverse from the rest of the fights I've been in, because they're much more complex and they take quite a few more rounds than ideally any of your usual skirmishes with your, you know, like 3 to 4 foes that show up.
Yeah.
And so they make for a very entertaining kind of change up in the combat, and they really do test the quality of your party. But getting like employing a strategy and finally seeing one that works effectively against their particular, I guess their particular approach to the fight is really rewarding. I think that's probably where this game shines in its entertainment, is when something that you decide to go out on a limb with sticks, because otherwise when things don't stick, you're very much aware of it because your party is either then taking heavy penalties or outright dying.
So have you tried a frontline Vestal yet?
No, I haven't. And that sounds horrible, but maybe I'll have to, because if you're suggesting it, I assume it's something worth trying out.
I'm not saying it's great, but sometimes, you know, your party compositions are decided by who's not insane.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have a favorite class, Neil? I'm having a really hard time deciding if the Grave Robber or the Man at Arms is the best class outright. Because I don't think I've ever had a bad Grave Robber, and I definitely have not had a bad Man at Arms. They're exceptional classes.
At some point in time, I don't know if man at arms, or is it Man of Arms? I don't remember.
It's Man at Arms.
Okay. At some point in time, like, I think they might have nerfed him a bit, because when Man at Arms was released, he was literally just like a one tank DPS machine. So you would just do riposte and he would have a self mark, which I think those mechanics are still in, but he was just unstoppable. You would take him and you'd take an occultist or a Vestal, and you could basically 2v, I mean, technically you still have to have a party of four, but you could two man any battle, it seemed like. But when I was playing with Cookie not long ago, or months ago, I guess, rather, he didn't seem nearly as broken. So at this point, I think for early game, I like the Highwayman, but then late game, I'm probably a bigger fan of the Leper.
Yeah, those are also two wonderful classes that I've enjoyed a lot. The Highwayman, if you've got a good enough dodge, has really great skill set if you have the riposte or the like open vein abilities. I've got one that's got like a lunge attack that will bring him to the front of the party, and then a point blank shot that will do a bunch of damage and move him behind my tank that's normally at the front. And so just like doing that in sequence over and over is really punishing for enemies. And then the Leper is just very sturdy, especially if they have their self-heal ability.
Yeah, I know for certain that a lot of these games have changed up, or I mean, a lot of these characters have changed quite a bit since release, so I can't say for sure if I would still feel the same way if I actively played. It's really interesting how much the game changes as you get further and further in. Like, you start to value your bleed and plague damage. So like the Plague Doctor, which is, you know, kind of whatever early game, can be useful, starts to really shine late game too.
Yeah, I've had trouble effectively employing one of those for the most part. So that is always good to know. The only unit that I think is trash is the one that uses the like incenses, and I can't remember what the name of it is. I don't think I have one in Antiquarian. That's what it is.
Oh, that's a new one that I haven't had any time with yet. Yeah,
it seems to be really useless. Like, doesn't do much damage, and unless you have a very strong party of three other units, all of the abilities are mostly like buffs, and some of them are like self buffs to a unit that I think is already pretty, like, doesn't have any offensive or defensive capability, and therefore doesn't make much sense.
So is there a possibility that she's being used more as a support character during your camps?
That is absolutely a possibility. I've never taken one on a medium or long length mission, so I don't know. Because normally they either die or they get my whole party killed by being useless. So I don't even hire them anymore.
Interesting. At some point I'll have to find some time to go back to this game.
So speaking of just throwing bodies at a problem until it's solved, I hear you have a follow-up for Trillian.
Yeah, I beat it, and I almost feel like I need to say or claim that like beating the game once isn't really all that you do with Trillian. Because there are, like, I think Tiffany was saying, 10 different endings. And you get those based upon what overlord, or which girl, basically, you beat the boss with. But, like, I first wanted to say I maybe didn't bring enough appreciation to the game mechanics as I've learned more about them since then. In a sense, like, the boss is completely presented to be an unbeatable hurdle that you have to get over. And the core mechanics of that game, as I probably described to some extent last time, are sacrificing these main characters, like these named characters that you develop like friendships with, and figuring out how best to use your basically fodder at that point to whittle away at this boss. But like, every time one of your characters dies, they have a last attacker, like a death spell that they can cast. And one strategy you could take is sealing away different body parts of the boss of Trillian after each death. So by the time you hit like a third or fourth character, the boss battle becomes not necessarily trivial, but a lot easier to manage. And likewise, the boss is taking the damage done to Trillian it persists. So again, you're just trying to knock off little by little as you get further and further into the game.
It's a war of attrition, more or less.
Yeah, and at the same time, like, if you run away from these battles, Trillian continues to eat away at the underworld. So you have like, what is it, like a countdown, I guess. So you can't just like fight the boss, then run away, fight the boss and run away. Like, there's a point where you run out of time. But my particular playthrough ended up becoming maybe a little less enjoyable when I used an exploit to basically make one of my overlords like overpowered. And it's kind of bad, because at the time I assumed like, well, I'm going to do this just so I can keep the one character I like alive, or the character I prefer the most alive. And she happens to be like one of the earlier characters to use. But like, it's a pretty specific series of directions you have to follow. So anyone that is not aware of the exploit would not be able to encounter it. It's still pretty easily reproduced, and it more or less completely breaks the game. Which is like kind of a bummer, because now going back to Trillian, like I really didn't have to suffer the same sort of like heartbreak that I've had to, and or at least as much heartbreak as I've had to in games like Darkest Dungeon, which, aside from the resource exploit with, you know, new mercenaries, like, that doesn't stop you from experiencing heartache when your favorite characters end up dying just due to the nature of hard fights and hard bosses. So that's kind of maybe a PSA that if you're interested in Trillion, do not do the experience exploit and don't even look it up, because after doing so, like, it's a fundamental change in the way you play. And now I'm having troubles like reapproaching the game without using that same exploit. I guess it's time to talk about some news.
What?
The first thing on our docket is by far the most interesting news to me this week, and that is that Bandai Namco has been confirmed to be the developers behind the upcoming Metroid Prime 4. Though I believe they'll be developing it in conjunction with a team from Nintendo, is what it sounds like.
Specifically, the director or producer of the Metroid Prime series is on board with them. So
yeah,
I would say kind of think of it like Nier Automata, where Yoko Taro was involved in a Platinum development.
Right, and that game came out excellently, as anyone who's listened to our podcast for quite a while or our Game of the Year edition will be able to note. So Retro Studios is no longer going to have their hands in on this, and although I didn't play Metroid Prime 3, I heard it was pretty well... It was a pretty critically acclaimed game within the Prime series, and the previous two in the trilogy, Prime and Prime 2 Echoes, are some of my favorite games that I've ever played, and I think some of the best games that I played on the GameCube whatsoever. I've probably bought and lost like 2 to 3 copies of Metroid Prime. And it's one of the few GameCube games I think I still have somewhere in my like box of luggage that has old gaming keepsakes. So how do you guys feel about this? Do either of you actually have any interest in Prime 4? Is it just me that's excited about the game coming out and interested in seeing what a new developer might mean for the game?
I think I'll probably dip my toe in. I believe... No, Lizzie was a Mega Man person, so probably not. I played a little bit of Metroid in the past. Samus was never really my Smash character, though, so...
Gotcha. Yeah, I played Metroid before I ever played Smash, and so I picked Samus outright as like one of the characters I was going to master when I started playing that game. I'm interested to see how it plays out. I mean, Bandai Namco has been behind the production or the publishing of some pretty good games. I think, let's see, last time, maybe not last time they worked with Nintendo, but a notable time they did work with Nintendo was actually for the most recent Super Smash Bros. For the Wii U, Smash 4. And I think that game is, you know, truly wonderful. They also worked... on Dark Souls 2. So, is it Dark Souls 2 Scholar of the First Sin? I think they worked on both.
Bandai Namco owns Dark Souls in general, too. So,
yeah, From Software does most of the development on that.
Yep.
It's better than what happened with Team Ninja on Other M, which that game was okay. It wasn't great. But it also was just the weirdest, like, I guess, evisceration of Samus as like a character with any sort of what's the word for it? Like, she didn't have any personal agency in that game, and it was very annoying to check in with your commander over and over before you got the ability to use your Varia suit or your Morph Ball or your Super Missile. So. As long as it doesn't end up being like a Metroid Other M and is a little bit closer to just the core kind of silent first-person exploration shooter that was the previous Prime games, I'll probably be happy.
To me, this move is going to be either heralded as the reason why Metroid Prime 4 does or is a great game or why it's terrible.
Yeah, it'll be the scapegoat either way.
But I'm going to go ahead and say that this is probably a good sign for Metroid fans, Metroid Prime fans specifically, because, like, I mean, I don't know how much we've talked about Metroid's existence to Nintendo, or, like, in Nintendo's eyes But Metroid was not, for the last, you know, decade, a series that Nintendo really considered as coveted as Zelda, as Mario. I mean, those things are obvious, right? But
yeah, no, it's absolutely not as popular.
To the extent that they basically allowed an American studio to develop, you know, their last three games, or, well, last three excluding Project M.
Project M is the Smash Bros. Mod.
It's a good sign that Nintendo's actually giving it off to someone other than Retro Studios, because if you look at Retro Studios, if I'm not mistaken, they basically just make the B-tier like Nintendo games as they relate to quote unquote important IPs. Like, if I'm not mistaken,
popularity for sure.
They've done Donkey Kong and
Tropical Freeze
was good.
It's good. It might be good, but it's not heralded as like an extremely successful game.
Because you're looking for a Donkey Kong, because it was on the Wii U. I'm going to use that as the excuse.
Donkey Kong Country Returns 3D, like another game that didn't necessarily get nearly as much accolade as, you know, any other 3DS Nintendo game, basically.
Like, they gave us Mario Kart 7.
I actually don't think they led the development on that team. I believe it was Nintendo's in-house studio that did, like, was responsible for the principal work on it. I could be wrong. I don't know the inner workings of Nintendo, but
why not, Neil?
Retro is not necessarily like their A-tier choice. But the one concerning thing, though, is that Bandai Namco is like a big company with multiple studios within it. I think they all fall under like one or two names. But like, we're talking about, I can't even think of all of the fucking games they've been involved in. But like Dragon Ball, do we know who exactly
Xenoverse? They did Xenoverse. They did Pokken Tournament recently.
Pokken Tournament, that's a good one.
Do we know who developed FighterZ? Because I thought that was their. Arc. That's right.
That was Arc. Yeah. They gave us Tekken 7 and Dark Souls.
No, Dark Souls was from Software. They might have some assistance from Bandai Namco, but yeah, it's kind of like, it really boils down to just like what level of focus Bandai Namco is going to give this project, because we haven't heard a secondary studio, so we really don't know if it's actually someone else working on it under the Bandai Namco label.
Well, apparently Bandai Namco is taking the liberties of, if you go to if you go to their website, Dragon Ball Z Fighters is just all over the place.
Of course, because they paid Arc System to make it, so they own it. And, I mean, why not? That game looks amazing. In other news, as a follow-up to last week's news, 6 million copies of Monster Hunter World have been shipped worldwide, making the game not only the fastest and most shipped and sold in the series, but also the fastest-selling game in Capcom history, which... That is that's a feat. That's impressive.
Well, perhaps Capcom will learn its lesson and release games worldwide all at once rather than making other countries wait for months. Because with most Monster Hunter titles, it's like it goes to Japan and then like 6 months later to a year later, then it comes to like the US and things.
Which can be typical of a lot of Japanese games, but...
Yeah, but that's an easy way for it to be kind of forgotten from the public sphere for a long enough period of time that it could impact sales.
It's like, oh, we're finally getting this, but now a bunch of other crazy things are coming out.
Oh, I mean, games release at all points in time. I think it's more pertinent that if you release worldwide, you're going to have the chance to create a fastest selling game to begin with, because you're not just selling it to Japan and Eastern Asia. But yeah. I wanted to say, I think it's safe to say that this, along with more interactive VR experiences, is paving the way to a real-life Sword Art Online.
I'm not doubting it. I think before we get Sword Art Online, though, we're going to probably get Ready Player One first.
Yeah.
Since they use gloves.
You're probably not wrong. So I think that does it for this episode of the Fancy Ramen Podcast. If you have comments, questions, or concerns, you can write in at podcast@fancyramen.com.
Feel free to leave us a like and a comment on the Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever else you get your podcasting needs, except for Spotify. We're still not on Spotify.
And since we are dirt cheap, we don't pay for advertising of our podcast anywhere. And therefore, we're outsourcing to you guys to do all of our advertising for us. So if you'd like to tell a friend, tell a family member, anyone you think who might be interested, we would greatly appreciate it. We may send you a dime in the mail. Don't quote me on that.
Yeah, did you pick up any reviews when you last looked at Apple Podcasts, Scott?
So I think I have to download iTunes to look at the Apple Podcast reviews, and I'm not doing that to my computer. I love it much too much.
What, you think that... Are you saying something bad about iTunes?
iTunes running on any sort of Windows software is just truly a headache that can never... that can never really be forgotten. I'm so glad I don't have it on this computer, and I'm not going to subject myself to putting it onto any of my computers again. I don't know how to navigate it anymore. And the only time I ever remember it being somewhat functional is when I was using a Mac. So,
well, there you go, listeners. Our apologies for breaking our promises.
No, that's not true. You own a Mac. Neil, I believe you might be able to do this for us.
But Scott, like you, I would never put iTunes on any any PC or Mac.
Okay. Well,
I think I have iTunes on here, and I'm not sure how. Wait. Oh, never mind. Yep. Wait. Okay. Yep. Here we go. Yep. There's iTunes on here, apparently, and it needs updating.
All right. Well, I'll see if I can't find someone who has iTunes on their computer that will let me go and search our podcast and take a peek at our reviews section.
Yeah, we tried. Maybe next week, everybody.